Coming up on New York Now, Liz Krueger discusses the possibility of a reunified Democratic Party in the state Senate.
No one should imagine we will turn around the state legislature and pass every bill we've been hoping to pass in our first 5 weeks. That's a ridiculous set of assumptions.
And Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio and Jimmy Bielkind of Politico New York join the Reporters Roundtable.
He says that the Ethics Committee is a kangaroo court. It's a joke. It's a charade. And I think he said on a local talk radio station that if anyone should be looking at, anyone has to face a hostile workplace, it's him.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. Well, it's been a busy post-holiday week of news at the Capitol and elsewhere around New York State. And to discuss it, we are at the Reporters Roundtable, where I'm happy to be joined by my partner here at WMHT, Matt Ryan, Jimmy Bielkind from Politico New York, and Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. All right, first up is reunification of the state Senate in the offing. We found out early in the week that the state Democratic Party, and I think it's fair to say that that means Governor Andrew Cuomo, had put forth a blueprint for the reunification of the mainline Democratic Conference and the independent Democratic Conference led by Jeff Klein that would involve both leaders being able to attend leaders' meetings, both leaders approving bills that come to the chamber floor, and oddly enough, both leaders getting to approve each other's deputies, which seems to be a straight shot at mainline deputy leader Mike Gennaris.
But there's some really key qualifications here. One is it's not going to happen until after the state budget is passed. And in recent years, they've done all their important business as part of the budget. So that means that the Republicans still control the chamber through the most important part of the session. They wouldn't even hold special elections to fill two key seats, the Democratic seats they need, until after the budget's done. So, you know, they're getting the headline that there's reunification, but when?
Jimmy, unpack that a little bit. The two remaining seats, George Latimer and Ruben Diaz Sr., who are going off to other jobs.
Well, so they'll resign their Senate seats about year's end, call it January 1, December 31. And from the moment there is an official vacancy, Governor Cuomo may issue a proclamation for a special election. And that has a mandated 70 to 80 day time frame. So if Governor Cuomo wanted these seats filled lickety-split, we could be looking at special elections in early March before, as Karen pointed out, the real thicket of budget negotiations. So this has led to a lot of blowback by progressive groups, indivisible groups that were already organizing against IDC senators and who say that they reject this deal and they are going to continue organizing against the IDC. They say that if Cuomo were actually serious about this, then he would be doing it immediately, that there would be no odd sort of delay tactic. And we haven't heard from either the governor himself or any of the person on his political team why they envisioned April for these
elections. But changing control of the state Senate in early March with maybe 2 or 3 weeks to go before the budget deadline would bring on chaos. And Jimmy, what is Bielkind's first law of Cuomo?
Chaos is not Cuomonian, yes. Casey. And I was there. Karen, you were there. Mm-hmm. Matt, Casey, you were there in 2008, 2009, 2010, the last time Democrats controlled the state Senate majority. It was chaotic, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And so I think what many people who are close observers of the chamber realize is that even if you, well, there are so many levels on which this deal has to be qualified, but the first of which is Simcha Felder, the renegade Democrat from Brooklyn who is caucusing with the Republicans, and who has essentially said on the record, oh, I would consider joining a block of 32, but really it's just about who's gonna give me a little bit more pastrami, was his word. So you have what you've always
it's like
had.
A different ethnic form of ziti, I think.
You've had the same problem here that has plagued the Democrats in the Senate for almost a decade. If you only have a 32-seat majority, you need everybody on board. And there is not an ethic or a tradition of discipline within the members in that chamber to make that work. Mm-hmm. And no matter what the arrangement is going to be, I think you're looking at problems until there's a bigger cushion or until Republicans retake an outright 32-seat majority.
Yeah, those two seats that are empty, one's in Westchester, one is in the Bronx, have been held by Democrats. But Casey, you noted one of the first things that jump out at me was that they have say in who the deputy leader is, and the deputy leader mm-hmm. is Mike Gianaris from Astoria.
On the mainline side.
On the mainline side, who has come out and criticized Cuomo on a number of occasions and is no friend of Jeff Klein. So that the inclusion of that seems to only suggest that they want Gianaris.
But the mainline Dems Gianaris. Have said, that's fine by us. If you just want to take away that title, that's good, which seems to suggest that Gianaris would still
taking one
role.
For the team.
Or he could have, he doesn't have to be deputy leader and still have some role of power. So, but you know, the Senate Democrats, they're anxious to go along with anything now to get back into power, I think. So they're the more willing party in this because, you know, they don't have anything to lose. They have everything to gain from this.
It has been an incredible week for revelations about bad behavior by men. One of those men is Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin, Scaticoke Republican, who was elected earlier this month from the assembly where he's been for the past 7 years to serve as Rensselaer County Executive. What we learned this week in a letter from Speaker Carl Hastie, a release from Speaker Carl Hastie, was that he was guilty of, and I will quote here, that he engaged in sexual harassment by asking an assembly aide for nude photos in a discussion that apparently took place on the chamber floor. Now, the Assembly's Ethics Committee found out about that complaint the very next day, June 15th, 2016, which means it took the committee 17 months to make any notice of this public while Steve McLaughlin was running, winning the Republican primary in Rensselaer County and then winning a very narrow race to become county executive.
And they did act in June of 2017, a full year later, where the committee was split. They have four Democrats and four Republicans. It was split 4-4. We don't know how they voted, but perhaps it was, you know, Republicans against Democrats. And they couldn't find any wrongdoing because they were split. But they said that Steve McLaughlin had to get 2 or 3 hours of sensitivity training. It just seems to me that should have been made public there, because it just, if either he didn't do anything and that's fine and let's keep it quiet, but if you're recommending that someone needs more training against sexual harassment, it just seems like at that point the public should know, particularly voters in Rensselaer County. Not saying he did anything, but that's a piece of information that they should have had.
It's a very interesting grounds, and clearly the Assembly approached it from a legal perspective and sort of from a legalistic perspective, in that if you have an allegation against someone and the established process does not substantiate it, well, do you make that public? Because you've decided essentially not to substantiate. But you're absolutely right, Karen, on the fact of, do voters, do constituents have a right to know that this is going on? There was clearly enough smoke there to look for a fire, and as you say, to say that there should be mandated training. What of course happened next was the committee reported in its final determination that they believe McLaughlin told people of the identity and the nature of the accusation and the identity of his accuser, which violates the anti-retaliation laws. And then, earlier in later in November, they say that revelation proves that McLaughlin's denials are not credible. Yeah. McLaughlin denies this. He's taken a very defiant tack. He says that the Ethics Committee is a kangaroo court. It's a joke. It's a charade. And I think he said on a local talk radio station that if anyone should be looking at, anyone has to face a hostile workplace, it's him.
Yeah, he criticized the assembly lawyer, noting he's from New York City multiple times.
New York City academic.
That's right. As Jimmy said, he was vehement. And as you would expect he would be, right?
Yeah.
We've known him for
Classic
a number of
Steve
years.
McLaughlin.
He pushed back on this as hard as he could.
But because of the way the Ethics Committee handled this, I think it's hard to know who to believe. And, you know, he has some points about the way that it was handled. And it just seems to me that they need a better way to do it. People have called for having an independent panel to do this. It's hard when the lawmakers are policing themselves, because they tend to want to protect the reputation, if not the member of their party, then the whole legislative body.
I should note at this point that a month after he received that sensitivity training, he was recorded lacing into his top aide using extremely vulgar language, which was reported by my paper. You wonder what the ethics committee thought about that report when they saw it in late August.
Yeah, well, I don't think they acted on that, though. That wasn't part of their complaints.
No.
But, yeah, it's out there.
Not yet, but who knows? Yeah.
Well, we won't know because they keep it very quiet.
Yes, indeed. We are talking Friday morning. It would appear that a U.S. Senate vote on the Republican tax reform plan is in the offing, so we can't talk about that yet. But already the fear about what the fiscal effect could be in New York continues to be a drumbeat.
Politically speaking, Lee Zeldin had a fundraiser with Paul Ryan that I guess Paul Ryan canceled because Lee Zeldin, who's from the eastern end of Long Island, is a no vote on this. The other thing politically that was interesting to me is that we interviewed Stephanie Miner, the outgoing Syracuse mayor, in September. Karen, you conducted that interview. Asked her if she had any interest in the congressional race out there. John Katko is a Republican, a moderate Republican that holds that seat. She said she really wasn't interested in that. She changed her tune this week after his vote.
Yeah, because he looks more vulnerable now. Mm-hmm. And maybe Governor Cuomo doesn't look quite as vulnerable.
Democrats wanted her in that race more than in a primary against Andrew Cuomo.
Absolutely. I don't know. What more can we say except for it's bad for New York? I don't know any group that's saying this is good for New York. Well, everybody from business groups on down.
Assuming this will go through the Senate, it now goes to reconciliation. There are 9 Republicans in the New York House delegation. 4 of them supported the bill last time around. Will that change in the next vote? And that's going to be a key in the next election.
All right, well, now we turn our attention to Karen DeWitt's interview with State Senator Liz Krueger addressing the possibility of Senate Democratic reunification and the problem of sexual harassment at the state capitol.
Senator Liz Krueger, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Well, the big news, at least in state government this week, is the possible reunification of the Senate Democrats and the breakaway Independent Democratic Conference. You're a member of the rank-and-file Senate Democrats. I think that you have wanted to be back in power for some time. Is this good news that's come out?
I'm cautiously optimistic. Right now, it's simply a verbal statement by Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Jeff Klein.
Who are the two leaders,
The two leaders, that they are open to this. The way the letter from the state party was written, do you accept? There were no details. If you take a look at the letter, there was just you have to say yes or we're going to primary you, right? It also talked about this happening after the budget is done.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about. There's a lot of qualifications here. I mean,
yes.
The plan now is that the Republicans would continue to control the chamber through the budget. That's when most of the major decisions have been made in recent
exactly.
years.
Exactly. And I've been in Albany long enough to know that we can still be dealing with budget in August. Primaries are September. So if somebody wanted to play out a clock because it's not to their advantage, the Senate Republicans, for unification of the Democrats in the Senate, budgets go long sometimes.
Well,
and that also has its own impact.
Yeah, because the governor has said that he would not call special elections for 2 Democratic seats.
Until the budget's over.
Because we should clarify when you start in January, there's only going to be 30 Democrats. You need 32.
Correct.
You wouldn't call the special elections until the budget's over. Presumably that's the end of March, but that doesn't necessarily mean that.
Correct.
What if he called special elections earlier? I know the Working Families Party, Executive Director Bill Lipton is saying they could have them as early as March 13th, and then, the Democrats would have enough members, presumably, to, be in control for the budget.
I would support that. I don't accept, even if there was no unification discussion, the concept of special elections is to ensure that people are not left without representation at the district level for an exceptionally long period of time. So that is why we don't leave seats open until the next general election 2 years later. So I actually don't see any argument to drag this out and not have special elections at the earliest possible time.
Yeah, because we could go through the budget with these 2 districts in the Bronx and Westchester.
Not having representation. And I'm going to assume, but I haven't heard for sure, that the governor's not going to call specials for the assembly empty seats either, because why would you have multiple days of special elections? In which case, it's not just the two Senate districts not being represented, it's the individual assembly districts also not being represented.
Is the governor trying to have it both ways here, getting credit for trying to reunify the Democrats, but not having to deal with you folks during the budget, essentially dealing with the Republicans instead?
That's certainly an issue that's been raised by many people at this time. Yes.
Okay. Is it something that you think?
I will give the governor the benefit of the doubt, but the way, when you look at the schedule, the way this plays out, it's not really giving Democrats the opportunity to, and the time, to actually turn the Senate around and move important legislation that matters for people all over the state of New York that we know has been stalled because of a Republican Senate, and we all are on board as saying we need to move this legislation. So we need to move this legislation, we want to move this legislation. As Democrats, it's the right answer, and yet there would have been ways, it seems to me, to time this to give us more opportunity to get something done in 2018.
I want to talk about that legislation in a minute, but first, not to complicate things further, there is one senator, Simcha Felder of Brooklyn, who meets with the Republicans. We haven't mentioned him. He's not part of these two factions. Now, he said he would possibly come back, but he has some qualifications himself. He would, for instance, like to see armed guards at all public schools in New York City as a condition of coming back to the Democrats. I mean, do you foresee something like that happening, that the rest of the Democrats might agree to, you know, that kind of a bill?
This is a legislative body. All of us are legislators and know that the only way you get anything done is to get the votes. Shouldn't be news to anyone anywhere that that's how legislation gets done. So do I foresee that at some point in time after reunification of IDC and mainline Democrats, we need to sit down with Simcha Felder and discuss what's possible for him to come back? Yes. Now, the complicating factor here is, as you and I just explained, that will only be a storyline for an incredibly short period of time. We usually finish session in June. We're talking about maybe getting rolling as a unified Senate in May, the end of April, right?
Absolutely.
Once people take oath of office.
And supposedly the session's ending in late June.
Right. So, and then September are primaries, November are generals. And so everything starts again in January 2019 with a new legislature. Many of us in the Democratic Party are feeling very confident it's going to be a very good November for Democrats all over the state and the country. And so with all due respect, Simcha Felder is the 32nd Dem. May only be relevant for a few weeks of 2018.
Because presumably if Democrats pick up seats, they'll have a stronger majority. Well, some of the issues that you mentioned earlier, the Reproductive Women's Health Rights Act, the DREAM Act for college tuition for children of undocumented immigrants. I know one of the things you support is legalizing marijuana for recreational use. These are some big items.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, do you foresee that you would be able to get those accomplished in maybe the month that you would have if this whole thing works out? And also you might need some Republican votes for some of those as the way the Senate stands now.
It's likely that we do need Republican votes for some of those things. Mm-hmm. And I actually believe if we bring these bills to the floor, we will have Republican votes. You have to look at each bill individually. You just listed a group of
them.
Yes, I
know. Yeah.
But again, for me, the way this is lining up and the story is being written, again, vis-a-vis the governor and the state party mandating certain things, we will only have a few weeks or maybe 5 weeks when we are officially the majority. So no one should imagine we will turn around the state legislature and pass every bill we've been hoping to pass in our first 5 weeks. That's a ridiculous set of assumptions, and I'm going to pretty much guarantee, as desperately as I would like every bill I care about to pass on day one, it is unrealistic to imagine the entire agenda of the Democratic Party that's being held back by Senate Republicans will turn around in a few weeks at the end of session this year.
So you think a lot of these issues are still going to be around in 2019?
In 2019, but I am pretty confident we can now walk into 2019 reunified with increased numbers of Democrats and real opportunities to do real change in New York.
Well, finally, I have to ask you about sexual harassment, since we are really having a moment in the state and this country. We saw an assemblyman sanctioned this week for sexual harassment, Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin, though he denies it. Do you think that there are other cases right now that we're going to find out about?
So I'm not on the ethics committee, where I might be privy to some kind of information. So I don't know. What I do know as a woman living in America, that I wake up every morning and wait to find out something I didn't know when I went to bed last night about somebody I thought I knew at least something about. So I assume that, yes, we should all be both wary of what the next shoe to fall is, but that I hope as a country it is waking us up to desperate need to change our cultural patterns of behavior, how we are educating our children, men and women, or future men and women, and that I urge every single woman out there who feels that this has been done to her to stand up and hold their harassers responsible. I think it is painful to many, both victims and abusers, but critically important that we take this moment in American history to say, we're simply not going to allow it to continue, and we're not going to shame women into never talking about it, and there will be penalties to be paid.
Do you think the legislature has the right process for that? Now, I know the McLaughlin case, it raised a lot of questions. For instance, the public didn't know about it. It was going on for a year and a half. In the meantime, he was elected to a higher office. The voters didn't know about it. He says that he thought the Ethics Committee handled things wrong, and it just raises a lot of questions.
Right.
I mean, should there be some kind of independent body doing this instead of lawmakers themselves kind of trying to, you know, police themselves?
I actually think an independent body is a very good idea. You know, there's more limitations on the legislature than private employers. I was asked yesterday, will CBS, NBC just fire somebody the next day? And I said, actually, the legislature doesn't really have authority to fire the legislature. Technically, the voters get to fire the legislators, but they only get to do it every 2 years. The courts get to find you a felon, and then you can't serve, which requires then somebody come forward and say a felony's been committed and prove it. And in one example, in the New York State Senate since I've been here, we actually used a historical precedent to create a trial and throw someone out of the Senate, Hiram Montserrat.
That's right.
I don't think, as I recall, the Assembly even has that option, and the Senate's used that option once every 100 years. So I actually think, personally, that an independent process outside of the legislators themselves does make sense, but I don't believe under existing law or even the Constitution, an independent process could vote you off the island. But I certainly question a year and a half timeline. And in the Mr. McLaughlin storyline, he's gone from the legislature. He didn't run again because he won as Rensselaer County Executive. I can't revisit the voters, but my guess is, because he won by such a small margin, that if this storyline came out before the election earlier in the month, a woman named Andrea Smith would be the county executive for Rensselaer County.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Interesting times we live in. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, Karen, great interview. It was interesting, of course, that she said, look, even if we are able to retake the majority in April, don't count on all these progressive agenda items happening at once.
Yeah, she's really lowering expectations there. Look, it's going to take them a month just to change all of their offices, because I know when they've changed powership in the past that that's been a big issue, who gets what office. I'm being a little facetious, but yeah, they're going to run out of time because the session ends in late June. So they're saying, you know, wait for 2019 for these issues.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, thank you very much to Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio and Jimmy Vielkind from Politico New York. And now let's send it back to Matt at the desk.
All right, thanks, Casey. We're asking you in our poll question this week, do you support the current tax reform bill in Congress? Let us know by logging on to our website. There's the address, nynow.org. Last time we asked, can a Republican defeat Andrew Cuomo in 2018? 54% said no. A lot of viewers explaining their vote, including Joe Inouigo watching on WSKG. He said, all Cuomo has done is to chase people out of New York. Carol in West Galway in Saratoga County disagrees. He is doing a great job, a solid leader. He is informed on the issues and proactive with solutions, something the rest of our country is sorely in need of. And finally, at LMM489 on Twitter said, almost definitely not, but we could primary him out yet. Thank you to all those who took the time to vote. You can do so again by heading to nynow.org. While you're there, you can follow links to us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you missed any part of this program, you can watch it in full right now on our website. And you'll find a link to the Times Union's Capital Confidential blog, also at timesunion.com. And that will do it for us this week. We say goodbye with pictures from the hills of Ontario County, the Harriet Hollister Spencer State Park in Cannadice, to be specific. A great spot to catch a glimpse of the second smallest of the Finger Lakes, Honeyoy. For Casey Seiler and everyone here at New York Now, I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation.